Okay, here we go. It's another pretty neat piece of music for you. All right, we in this hour are gonna. I thought we'd just kind of take a walk all together around the block. Some of the houses will go up and knock and go into some different doors, some new things. We always try to present new material. There's a lot going on out there. Every home is kind of a different topic, and they're all fascinating if you look at them for what they are, horrifying in many cases. So let's kind of get ready to go here. You there, partner?
I'm here, Jeff. Good evening.
Yeah. Is it a good evening? I'll take your word for that.
Yes, it
Thank you. All
is.
right. We have in the past talked about this issue of people claiming that dental anesthetics were now impregnated with graphene oxide and God knows what else. Graphene derivatives, nanoparticles, hydrogels, you name it. All kinds of technology has been put into dental anesthetics. So when you go into the dentist, you get injected to numb your tooth before they drill on it, you're getting spiked or worse. Or any number of things. Well, this is crazy. So somebody did some really good research into it and looked at it. I'm going to give them credit. It's the Lundstrom, Lund, Lundstrom Family Restorative Dentistry Practice. And they did a great job. And I think they're in South Dakota. Anyhow, I'm not sure. But they went after this issue. Because people apparently were going into the office asking, is it safe to come in here anymore? Are you sure there's no graphene oxide, carbon nanoparticles, hydrogels, or lipid nanoparticles added to your articaine? Any other local anesthetics? Well, they asked. They went to the manufacturer, which is Purell, Pierrel. And they kept pushing Purell, and Purell said, no, there's nothing in there. And they said, well, we want this on your letterhead. Well, they finally got it on their letterhead. And we're going to go over that in just a couple of minutes to give all of you at least some, hopefully, some peace of mind. Tell us a little bit more about this. There were actually people not going to the dentist, right? Because of these rumors?
Yeah, that is still an ongoing fear of people. They have picked up on whatever La Quinta Columna has pushed out regarding graphene being in dental injections, and apparently this all started in 2021 with some, I guess, micrographs of something they saw under the microscope that was crystalline-like and was determined to be graphene oxide.
One of those light microscopes,
Yeah.
looking at dog hairs and pollen and fungus and mold and God only knows what else. Look, we don't take the platform here and try to dump on anybody, but I just want to say this from my perspective. I'm not speaking for Eric. I probably am, but La Quinta Columna is to be kept by any thinking person at arm's distance. Do not, I would suggest you do not embrace all the material coming out of that group. It has, over the couple of years we've been watching it, started from, a semi-reasonable perspective on examining this whole thing, and then it drifted off into loopy land. It's just garbage, a lot of it. So just be very careful about trusting any of these alt news sources, and I mean any of them. We think it's over 90% that are controlled, created opposition, and who are spewing the 90-10 rule. So be careful out there, all right? We're going to put this dental thing to rest here, I hope, shortly. Go ahead.
Well,
Anything
yeah.
else?
So you
Mm-hmm.
no. We now are, have ample evidence that the vials were analyzed with very poor methodology, and people that are
Very poor.
qualified to do the
Yeah.
analysis have not found graphene in these vials. So it was, 2 years of people going down a rabbit hole thinking they were being poisoned with graphene, and well, they're being poisoned all right, but it's not graphene. And I think it kept people distracted and going after remedies that were dubious and dangerous in some cases. Some of the things that people are resorting to, and we're now seeing people are getting injured with some of these concoctions.
Right, right. The Lundstrom dental practice very correctly went after the manufacturer and demanded that they have something finally put on letterhead. And what they did was they kept writing these people until somebody finally took the bull by the horns and did it, put it on letterhead. They got it. So the questions asked by Lundstrom, did you add anything to the injectable product that is not needed for its function? Does the injectable product contain graphene? Does the injectable product contain graphene oxide? Does the injectable product contain graphene hydroxide? Does the injectable product contain lipid nanoparticle technology? Does the injectable product contain a hydrogel technology? Does the injectable product contain a technology payload or ingredient that is not needed for its function? And lastly, does the manufacturer have a contract or agreement with a third party to include a technology payload or ingredient that is not needed for the injectable product? That's a hell of a good start. They went right after them with those questions, and I couldn't have phrased it any better. That's exactly what
they
did.
That was excellent. Excellent.
And so let me find the... I'm going to jump to the end. And you can see this if you look at the... our Spike archive on the right side of the homepage. It's the top story there. I think it's the top story. It's right there. But you can find it. Let me see. Declaration letter provided by On Pharma. I think this is it. This is letterhead. Dear Dr. Lundstrom, please see the following responses to your questions below pertaining to the onset buffering system. Did you add anything to the injectable product that is not needed for its function, et cetera, graphene, lipid nano, and all through the list? And the answer to every single question I just read is stated quite clearly, no, 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 no. So if anything were to ever be found in those injectables, that company would be in deep trouble. It's not going to happen. There's no reason for On Pharma, that's the name of the company, On Pharma, making local anesthetics better. There's no reason to put anything in these things. Because it's not logical. It's stupid. The worst thing in the dental office, the worst possible thing in the dental office is what? You want to take this?
The patients and people working there.
When you're sitting in that chair and that injected, that shot-up dentist and his assistant are leaning over you, breathing into your mouth and into your nostrils, into your lungs, do you get it? That's the danger. That's
right.
What you need to worry about.
That's right.
Nobody's able to think anymore. Now, that's not you people, but the general sheeple out there are out of the game now. They're just not there. They don't get it. They just don't understand. And if we have to tell people that the dentist injected breathing into your mouth is dangerous, you haven't been listening to anything we've said for over 2 years, 2.5 years almost. Okay. So there's that. That's a big one, and hopefully we put this to rest for you. When you go down to the bottom of that listing at the top of our archive, there's a link at the very bottom. It says On Pharma Letter, I think, and you can click on that and see exactly what I just recited from. It's right there. Okay, back to the graphene oxide issue one more time, which we have been resolutely against from the beginning. We have Dr. Ryan Cole. Erica, set this up. Todd, you're probably going to have to crank up the volume when we hear Dr. Cole on this particular transcription. So anyway, what are we going to hear? Go ahead.
Okay, this is this was behind a paywall on Epic Times, which is why Jeff can't get at it right now. Ryan Cole did an interview with Yanya Kellick of Epic Times back in early June. The title of the interview, How Humans Were Used as Lab Rats in the COVID Pandemic. Dr. Ryan Cole speaks on fragmented mRNA, spike protein messages, and the vaccine ego. So during this interview, about halfway through, it's about an hour long, he was talking about what they have been finding in the vials, and not the least of which lately has been this double-stranded DNA, the plasmids and the linearized DNA with the SV40 promoter. But then also he touches on the old issue of graphene, and he explains, and this is the first time I've actually heard somebody explain it accurately, that the methods that they used to arrive at this determination that there was graphene in there was completely flawed. So we'll play that, I don't know, it's about 2 or 3 minutes. All right.
Go ahead. Yeah, very good. All right, Todd, you may have to turn this up. We're not sure.
You've seen some of my talks where I love to open with a Mark Twain quote.
Whoops.
The man who does not...
I'm at the wrong place.
Okay, Todd, that was good level. Thanks. He lifted it up right away. So Ryan Cole is really stepping up now to carry a lot of the load of truth and reality in this fight. And, you know, praising him is a good thing to do. He and others. There are some Mike Yeadon, former science director for Pfizer, is saying some really strong things. Unfortunately, Mike bought into the ruse that there's no such thing as a virus. So you kind
or
of
a new virus, which I don't know if he's seeing the papers that are coming out now about. I mean, this is not a normal, typical flu. The clotting issues that are associated with it, and in particular, these amyloidogenic sequences now that are seem to be problematic wherever the spike goes, you've got amyloids.
You got it. And you don't want amyloids. It's microclotting. But what it's really doing here, the spike is causing any protein it encounters to misfold. In other words, to completely knock it out of commission and turn it into proteinaceous junk. These misfolded proteins begin to stick together and agglutinate, and there is your amyloid base. And from there on, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then you end up with amyloid clots. These are not blood clots. Go ahead. Let's play Ryan, if you got that ready.
So we're actually coming from rapid needle manufacturer as well. We know Japan rejected 2 million vials of Moderna because there was visible debris in the vials. So this was poor manufacturing. I don't know if you want to get into the graphene oxide controversy, yes or no. I can tell you a two-minute story on that.
Well, actually, yeah, let's talk about that, because this is one of the things that I hear. Most of the doctors I speak to just kind of look at me and say, why are you asking me about this?
But
basically, you hear people talking about it. There was one small group in Spain that got some vials, and there's a technique called Raman spectroscopy. And what you do is, you know, you put some of the vial content on a slide, and then you pick your target, and you shine a laser, and it'll break down the basic elements of what you're pointing at. Well, when you do that, you're supposed to do it for a millisecond or less, because the laser's powerful, and then it'll fractionate the basic particles.
Okay, can you hold that, Erica, right there real quick?
The conference guy that did the Raman study, he fired his laser at a handful of targets for 30 seconds each, not a millisecond, 30 seconds. He fried them. So if I take a little dish of creme brulee, put some sugar on top of it, and we know there's a lot of sugar in Madeira and Pfizer, and I take my little chef's torch, what happens to that sugar? It browns and it crisps, and if I run it too long, I scorch it. I turn it into charcoal. And what is charcoal? Charcoal is carbon, can be graphene, little oxygen. And so if I fry sugar molecules, I am going to make a carbon byproduct. He burnt the toast. He burnt the creme brulee by doing bad technique. And thankfully, he published what he did, and any good physicist will say, wait a minute, you don't do this for 30 seconds. You do it for a fraction of a second. And then if you look at it under electron microscopy, graphene is this regular sheet of 200 nanometer spaced little hexagons, thin flat sheets. And what the Spanish study showed were 500 nanometer sheets. Like, that's not graphene oxide. So basic science and good scientific practice negate this argument about graphene oxide being in the vials. And then there's a Pfizer document that says, oh, graphene oxide and gold. They said, see, it's in the Pfizer documents. I'm like, no, that's a different lab doing a technique for protein isolation. They mentioned their technique, which is a gold and a graphene layering, but it has nothing to do with the manufacturing line. So there's all these red herrings. What I like to point out is there are two dangerous things in these vials. That's a lipid nanoparticle and a gene sequence that's making your body make foreign proteins. Your cells are meant to make human proteins. And so to go down these rabbit holes and distracting pathways when we should be stopping this platform of lipid nanoparticle shots altogether, that's where the focus should be. And that's what frustrates me. Yeah, do all the science you want, hypothesize, experiment, great, that's cool. All these little hydras that people see, they're non-microscopists that have an old medical microscope sitting in a dusty room looking at their dog's hair, looking at pollen particles, looking at these hydras are actually a little piece from the bottom of a leaf. So I get frustrated that people are making claims that scare people for the which people do not need to be scared. It's scary enough that we're using a new gene-based modality with a lipid nanoparticle that goes to every organ in the body. Let's stop that. Don't worry about all this other stuff. Have your fantasy life, your fictional, explorational, hypothetical, whatever you want to do. Cool. But don't make claims that don't exist based on bad science.
Really, really important. I hope you're able to make sense of that. He was clearly talking about La Quinta Columna and the bad, bad science that was being promulgated out there as reality, when in point of fact it wasn't. What they called graphene oxide was basically fried and charred because of the exposure to the laser. Instead of a fraction of a second, it was 30 seconds. Crazy. That's not science. It's not good science. So, no, forget the graphene. Just keep in mind that that's a diversion, it's a misdirection, and it has really taken root, and people believe it, based on La Quinta Columna. And that's why I warn you, anything coming out of there is to be taken very, very lightly with a bag of salt. You just got to be real careful about this stuff. It's not a joke. They're putting things out there that are taken as gospel by most everybody who looks at it. They don't question it. Sad.
That's right. Anybody that's making these types of pronouncements, you know, ask them, what were your methods, materials? You know, has anybody reviewed it?
Awesome.
I mean, that's science. It has to be opened up for you know, peer review or criticism.
Right.
We need to know how you arrived at this.
I like what
that's
Ryan
what
said.
Our latest contributor did, Kevin McKernan, who found the DNA in these vials. He was very explicit about how he did it, and he opened it up for challenge.
Right. No, he open sourced it, basically all of his work. He just put it out there.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. So okay, we hope that we're getting this thing finally for all of you out there. And I know some of you get in arguments with your friends, and it's not your fault because they don't want to hear something that upsets their little tiny little recorded loop of knowledge that they hold on to and they push on others. What Ryan Cole said also was very prescient. It was very important. This is a death shot. It's a kill shot. It's a bioweapon. It's also a liquid nanoparticle injection. Keep that part of it in mind. This thing is diabolically diverse, and it has so many ways of destroying life. It's just a horror show coming through a needle. It's not going to get any better.
Well, no. And the lipid nanoparticle, as we've been saying from the very beginning, makes it a dirty bomb. It allows it to go everywhere.
Perfect. Yep. Okay, LNP, liquid nanoparticle. particle?
Lipid.
Lipid, as in fat.
That's right.
Covered with PEG, right? It's pegged
fat. Yep, there's some PEG in there. Yep, so it's, the PEG helps to emulsify it and also hide it from the immune system.
So this was designed so incredibly diabolically. It's just, they didn't throw this together in a couple of weeks. This was years in the making. And I still think there's a possibility that there was some outside help, but we'll never know. Doesn't matter. It is what it is. And what it is death in a needle for all too many people. I can't imagine anyone getting a viable shot who's going to live a normal lifespan. And I hate to say that. I really do. I don't want to say that. But that's the way I see it. How can anyone live a normal lifespan of 70, 75 years getting shot up with this shit at 30, 35, 20, 25? How? How can it happen? I just
oh,
don't.
It won't.
We're not
it
seeing
won't.
It. No. Sorry. Okay. The next door in the neighborhood to knock on has to do with the Pfizer documents. Now, in these documents, the idea of the mRNA instructions transfecting a human cell and then having that human cell produce the spike protein is pretty much a universally accepted premise now. But in reality, there have been some scientific investigations of in vitro human cells transfected and trying to determine what those cells really are producing. And they're not all producing just spike. They're producing other kinds of proteins. Understand, this is a pretty big development, and Ryan Cole also spoke briefly about that. Let me play this. And how long is it? 2 minutes?
Oh, very brief. Like a couple minutes, yep.
All right. Let's see what we get here. So this is Ryan Cole before he gets into his turbo cancer statements, talking about the Pfizer documents and what the cells are actually producing.
I understand it's not just spike that's being produced. There's
yes.
other elements, right?
And this was a very good study, and it may have come from BioNTech's own paper, where they took cell culture, transfected it with the injection, and then...
When he says cell culture, he's talking about human cells, all right? He took some human cells, whoever was doing the research, and basically injected it without poking it into each cell, but he exposed it, or the scientists exposed it, to the vial.
Once that cell culture starts producing the proteins that it's supposed to make, then you separate those out to say, are these cells making the target protein we want? Are they making the spike protein? And so it's supposed to weigh about 141 kilodaltons. And so we put a little electrical field on a little gel, and these proteins migrate, and then they stop according to their weight and electrical charge. And it was fascinating to look at that study and go, wait, we have 100 kilodalton weight proteins and 190, but nothing at 141 that would be a spike protein. So my concern scientifically is these products are making the body make unknown proteins as well, to the which we could be having these autoimmune responses. And if you look at the vial purity, the purity of the mRNA in the vials, you know, if you take a drug, you want to know if I go buy an aspirin, it's actually aspirin I'm taking. I don't want half of it to be aspirin and half of it to be laced with some other production side product that may be harmful. We know microRNAs are a known carcinogen. There's medical literature showing how sequences of mRNA can either be helpful in the body, natural ones, or can be extremely harmful. And certain types of cancers, you see increased circulating microRNAs in these patients. And so to know that there are these unknown, fragmented parts of mRNA in these vials is also poor manufacturing, one, but two, medically dangerous, and three, we don't know what all those things can be causing. I mean, the panoply of side effects that we're seeing in injured patients are numerous. And these are just, you know, tip of the iceberg reasons why these things could be happening. So, yeah, these are impure manufactured products, and other proteins could be causing the harm, not just spike protein.
One of the things we've just...
Okay, there you go. So at least one legitimate scientific experiment, research experiment, shows that transfected human cells in vitro, it's in a petri dish, are producing not just spike protein, but other kinds of proteins, unidentified kinds of proteins, perhaps designer proteins that don't even have names, at least names that we know. This is so grim, all of it. The more we learn, the more we look, the more doors we knock on and look inside, the more we find that is horrible, just horrible.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're not producing spike, what are you producing?
I don't know.
You know, you'd think that that was, you know, granted that that's an in vitro thing, so maybe, well, I don't know why you would assume that it would be any different. The fidelity of whatever's being translated would be any different when you inject it. It's probably worse than a controlled cell culture,
I would think.
But, you know, I don't know if many people realize that when they did the clinical trials, because there were a limited number of people early on, they were able to create the mRNA transcripts through an oligosynthesizer. So there were no contaminants. That's about as pure as you're going to get. And that's what was injected into people that were in that first, I guess it was phase one. And then when they went to large-scale production, that's when they began using these plasmids to generate the mRNA transcripts. And that's when you get all this E. coli contamination, both the bacterial endotoxins, the bacteria itself, and double-stranded DNA, and all the other junk. I don't think those are contaminants. The fact that they're there consistently in both the Pfizer and Moderna, it doesn't seem to matter which lot or vial you look at, or whether it's the monovalent or bivalent. They all had them.
I agree, 100%. By the way, there's a new booster in the offing that people will be able to take fairly soon, I guess. What do you know about that?
Well, this, if you paid attention to the FDA advisory panel that met a week or two ago, this is exactly what they were talking about, is, well, when do you think we could have a new booster out? And I heard July was tossed around, definitely before the fall, but Pfizer and Moderna were confident that they could have something ready for July. And now Moderna has already applied for, as if there's a legitimate application process, authorization for or approval for a new booster in, I don't know if they gave a date, but it's pending, and you know Pfizer won't be far behind.
Far behind, no.
But they say they're going to remove the Wuhan strain, the original so-called ancestral strain that's been present in both the monovalent and this bivalent booster. I don't know what they're going to switch it out for, some Omicron variants, I guess, XBB, whatever, XYZ, and how many different strains it will cover, I don't know. But they said, curiously, in this newspaper article, that only 17% of Americans have taken the bivalent booster, and that the challenge for this next booster was going to be to convince people to take it. So expect a marketing effort,
$100
propaganda
bonus,
effort,
free hamburger lunch. Who knows?
Who knows?
We've seen it all, pretty much. They're going to come up with something. The New York Times has reinstalled its COVID tracker into the newspaper, which might be part of something bigger. We don't know. That's interesting.
Well, don't they say? Cases are once again increasing in China?
Yes. And the new version is, why do
Arcturus?
I want to say, the Arcturus, yeah. Arcturus is the new version. That'll probably be in the new booster, or they'll claim it's a defense against that in the new booster. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. But again, you know, they're creating vaccines for a virus that's constantly mutating and evolving, and by the time they get this into people's arms, it's extinct.
They'll never run out of new vaccines. That's the game. Another variant, another vaccine. Oh, my. It kind of makes you tired just going through this. All right, let's go knock on the next door and see what's behind it. Looks like Peter McCullough might be in there. How can the unvaccinated test themselves to find out if they have acquired the spike protein through shedding or from a vaccinated spouse? Good question.
That's what everyone wants to know, right?
They want a test. I want to know, do I have spike? All right, let's see what Peter McCullough has to say about that.
And I talked to a lab director in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who had actually had a spike protein blood test that the Japanese had produced, and he was able to demo it there in Tulsa. He said it worked great, and he told me by private conversation, sadly, that the FDA is blocking that spike protein test onto the market. So what we do is indirectly, based on a paper by Castri Yuda and colleagues, an indirect measure of the spike protein is the D-dimer test. So the higher the D-dimer, it correlates with higher spike protein. We measure the quantitative antibodies against the spike protein, and the higher the quantitative antibodies, it's a proxy for a greater degree of spike protein kind of time concentration. And then lastly, we measure the antibodies against the nucleocapsid to see, you know, is it has there been a viral infection? And then with that, we can make some inferences about how much vaccine exposure the patient has had. But it would be much more useful to us to actually have a direct spike protein measurement.
Okay, so just for the benefit of those in the room, the question is, what would those tests be if we wanted to ask our physician?
So ask for a D-dimer test, a quantitative antibody against the spike protein, and the qualitative antibody against the nucleocapsid. Those would be the principal measures.
I want to mention, so Peter, I actually saw firsthand, and not directly on point, but relevant, I saw firsthand the results. They do have a test, and it's obviously not public. They were able to distinguish between someone who had required natural immunity versus vaccine-induced immunity. And I don't know if you're aware of that, but I'd be curious as a related thing. As a simple lawyer, it would seem to me that it ought to be the same antibodies.
Well, there's a way to figure it out. So if the antibodies are very high against the spike protein quantitatively, and there's no antibodies against the nucleocapsid, we confer that that's a vaccine picture. If we have antibodies against the nucleocapsid and lower range antibodies against the spike protein, we infer that's the infection. Now, Bruce Patterson at a company called Incell DX has a whole panel, and he's really featuring the cytokines. But the other distinguishing feature is that in the infection, the residual part of the spike protein that's stuck in the monocytes is the S1 segment of the spike protein, which is the outer segment of the spike protein, is the spicule on the ball of the virus. It's the outer segment of the spike protein. In vaccinated, he finds both the S1 and the S2 segment in the human body. So that's a distinguishing feature. But the Japanese and others, and Mass General just published a study measuring the spike protein. Spike protein measurement is possible. The FDA should allow what's called laboratory-derived assays to be out there and people be willing to pay for them. We should actually have spike protein measurement today. But it's another example of the FDA basically trying to block our progress in managing the pandemic.
Well, what else is new? They've done that from before day one. This is all a setup. Yep. Everybody knows it by now that cares to know. I'm unfortunately convinced that a great deal of people don't know because they've been lied to and they stare at the damn TV thinking that that's news. It's not news. It's programming, mind control programming. It's all it is. So they're not going to find anything you've heard this hour on any television outlet. It's not going to happen. You won't find it.
No, that's an alternate reality.
Totally. Well said. So, okay, there is not a real simple spike protein test available now. He did outline the three things that you should ask for if you want to test. But again, they're kind of circumstantial. The antibody test, I guess, is the best one. I really wonder what kind of immunity any of the injections can confer on anybody. I don't know
no,
why he said
no.
that.
All he's saying is that we're measuring the presence of spike indirectly by the presence or absence of antibodies.
Antibodies, yep.
Now, that's going to be valid. See, if you've had the actual viral infection, you will have antibodies to both spike protein and nucleocapsid. There's four structural proteins in the virus that you could conceivably make antibodies to, and the nucleocapsid would be one if you had the actual virus that you would have antibodies to. How long do they last? You know, if you had the infection last year, those antibodies may have faded. So it is subject to interpretation. If you only have antibodies to spike, well, that means either you've been spiked or transfected with the vaccine material, the genetic material. There's no way to distinguish that just yet. Although I believe Ryan Cole did say in this interview with Epoch Times that he's working with some labs or knows of some labs that are developing assays to be able to detect the foreign mRNA, which would be nice. I don't know how far off that is.
No.
The other fly in the ointment is that at some point they are going to, this is being talked about, maybe it's for this upcoming booster, start coding for mRNA that codes for the nucleocapsid. So you will be generating internally, if you get this thing, the nucleocapsid protein and the spike protein, and then that point you won't be able to tell if those antibodies are in response to the injection or the infection.
Can't tell.
And I think they're deliberately doing that to blur the lines.
Sure. Makes sense. Wow. Back, just rewind a little bit to Ryan Cole's statement about that very interesting science that showed that human cells transfected in a petri dish in vitro were spewing unknown proteins, basically, designer proteins, if you will. We have no idea what they do. They're not only producing spike. This should be a great concern to everyone. We don't know what these proteins are doing.
Well, they're toxic. Well, and that could explain the variation in people's responses to, well, what was injected in them and then whatever it is they're spewing that's affecting other people.
Good call. Yeah. All right, let's... we're just about around the block now coming home. We're going to stop at New Zealand and knock on their door and see who's on the other side. And it looks like her name is Hillary Butler. Hillary Butler has a couple things to say. One, she's pretty well informed. Talks about the composition of the spike. And she talks about shedding being all too real. Any more setup on this?
Yeah, Hillary Butler is in New Zealand, and she put together a 46-page document that she submitted to the parliament there, kind of as a testimony to her experience. She had adult daughter-in-law, that was mandated to get the vaccine for her job. The daughter-in-law suffered grievous injuries. It was Pfizer, and so Hillary's on record now for challenging these mandates and seeking justice. She's got her eyes wide open. She realizes this probably isn't going to receive much attention.
Mm-hmm.
But she has compiled, as I said, this 46-page testament to what happened to her daughter and the way she was treated, the poor care she received. And why this isn't a vaccine. It's not even close to being a vaccine. She's very, very well informed.
Okay.
And I did, just for the record, this was on Children's Health Defense with Brian Hooker and Polly Tommy.
Very good. All right. Here's Hillary Butler talking about composition of spike.
To have a detrimental effect on the immune system. There is absolutely no doubt about that. But that's not part of this submission. If I'd known I was going to talk about that, I would have sort of thought of it differently. But some people talk about it being a snake toxin. Well, it's not, but it has within it three sequences that belong to, one is the crate snake, and then there's two different cobra snake sequences. There's those, and there's also a super antigen, which is a Staphylococcus enterovirus, super antigen. It also has the HIV GP120, and it has the rabies G8 protein in it, as well as all of the other bits and pieces. But when you actually look at the spike, all of these things are strategically placed. There is even receptors on the spike strategically placed, which are specifically to pick up E. coli endotoxin. And when you look at the manufacturing process of this, that should send a red flag into anybody's head. Why would you do that? So there's aspects of this spike which are detrimental to health. Now, if you...
Before she goes on, she is making it quite clear there is not snake venom in these shots, okay, or in the spike. They're peptides, they're little sequences, and there's three or four. But the interesting thing about, and even including HIV, a part of that, rabies, they're all strategically placed in this synthetic nightmare called the spike protein. They're all placed, okay? This is some very serious thinking that went into this.
Talking about an infection that is naturally mutating, say like the flu, I mean, we're 2023. Nobody's going to give you a 2019 flu vaccine. They update it. This one is not being updated. So what people are getting is the spike for two extinct variants, when what they would get in an infection right now is completely different, has mutated, it's become far less serious. So,
okay, she's talking about the Wuhan strain and I guess the Omicron strain. It's Arcturus now that's supposedly the dominant variant. Okay, I'm going to jump ahead here. Anything you want to add to that? I think I stopped it about right where we want, no?
Yeah, I would say that she did a very good job at enumerating all the problem pieces of the spike, all the, yes, these pathogenic peptides, but she left out these amyloidogenic sequences. Seven of them. That's crucial.
Remember in the beginning, you longtime listeners, when we talked about once this thing is cleaved, it turns into a different organism. It's got seven points that now are exposed to the outside world as it travels around the body, so to speak. And explain what those seven points do, real quick.
Well, they're peptide sequences that, when they come into contact with your native proteins, will cause them to misfold.
Kills them, basically.
And what you essentially get is
right.
amyloid fibrils or misfolded proteins in critical areas that over time, because it's what's known as a propagon, it just takes one to start this misfolding process, and then it just, like, it dominoes.
Exactly,
it builds on
it
itself.
Right.
She's right, though. Everything. There's no part of this that isn't an issue. You know, you've got the GP120 from HIV that's going to cause problems with your T cells, might even cause them to commit apoptosis or be destroyed by the immune system. What else? The rabies G protein?
What the hell is that?
Another neurotropic peptide that could find its way to nerves.
Not randomly placed, not just dumped in there, remember?
Right, strategically placed. And then the snake or snail venom peptides are also neurotoxic. The super antigenic sequence would cause a hyperinflammatory response. And then portions of it are designed to stick to E. coli endotoxins or lipopolysaccharides. That, again, is going to create a horrendous inflammatory response. And they want us to believe that this just evolved naturally.
I am just very glad that she put this out there, and we were able to put it up here and add to it. The seven sequences on that cleaved or split open or opened up protein are really essential to understanding how the amyloid process begins in the body and how it accelerates. Very important. All these things were placed in things we don't even know. Remember, the transfected cells in that experiment are producing and excreting all kinds of proteins in addition to the spike that aren't necessarily made clear in the Pfizer documents at all. All right. She also has something to say about shedding being more than real and extremely dangerous. You want to say anything before we jump into this? We only have about 4 minutes left.
Yeah, this is pertaining to, again, her daughter-in-law who was forced to get the vax. So she got the right one, was almost immediately injured, and she was married, is married to a man that didn't get the injection. And they had their blood drawn before and after, and then took notes.
All right, here we go. Hillary Butler.
Under the microscope, there was a lot of fibrin in it, but also all of the macrophages and eosinophils and all of the immune system was literally frozen, not moving. So they checked my son's, and his was normal and all his eosinophils were moving. So she went for some immediate treatment, which, because her side effects were so serious, might have modified it, but I'm not sure that it was of that much use. A week later, they both went back and had their blood tested again. So in my daughter-in-law's blood were stuff that you see in vaccinated people, squares and circles. And my son had exactly the same in smaller quantities, but the difference between the two was that her eosinophils and macrophages were still frozen, whereas my son's macrophages were functioning really quickly and surrounding these things and breaking them all up and dealing with it. That was the difference. Now, how did they get from my daughter-in-law to my son? Well, they didn't change anything about their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever was in her got into him. Now, did it get in via exosomes? Did it get, I mean, we know in the infection that spike can be picked up from sweat, from all mucous membranes, from the vagina, from everywhere. If you're infected, spike goes out of your body. It's, you know, I mean, for goodness sake, they test wastewater. It comes out every which way. Breath, sweat, body mm-hmm. fluids, pee, poo, I mean,
so is what you're saying is that, yes, shedding clearly is real, but not to the same extent. It doesn't look the same as the vaccinated person. Is that?
Well,
that
this is. I can only talk about my son and my daughter-in-law because the scientists used them as an experiment to see what happened. Now, my son has remained unvaccinated, and he doesn't have well, I guess he does because he owns his own business and so he has to deal with customers who come in, but he doesn't have close contact with other people. Now, for instance, I know somebody else who is unvaccinated, but they work in a very small room with lots of people and all the other people are vaccinated. And she's, while she doesn't get constantly sick like they do, she doesn't feel right. But I don't know whether she's going to, well, I don't even know if many of these scientists are even looking at the blood now.
Okay, we're just about out of time. That was very helpful. Just another in the endless stream of pieces of information, absolutely making it crystal clear that shedding is real, shedding is dangerous, and shedding will infest a non-vaccinated person to the extent that they begin to show in their blood work and other areas that they have been basically passively injected to a one degree or another. And it varies person to person. This is not a joke. Again, and we've been saying this for over 2 years, you cannot go out and associate and be in close quarters with the vaxxed if you're unvaccinated. You can't do it. You shouldn't do it. All right, let's wrap it up. What else do we want to add about Hillary here? Anything?
I think that does it.
Okay. Well, I think we've given you, again, a pretty good multi-course meal of things to think about. Do share this program. Do understand that it's there for you anytime. It'll be posted later tonight or wherever you are tomorrow morning. It'll be up there in the archive on the right-hand side of the homepage. All right. Good job, young lady. Thank you, as always.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
And we will be right back with another hour for you after this.